Kubernetes for humans.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another special episode of Kubernetes for Humans. With me at the show, we have a guest that I'm not sure if I need to introduce, but Kelsey, maybe introduce yourself.
Kelsey Hightower. I've been learning Kubernetes for a little while now, and at KubeCon, hanging out with these folks.
Yeah, I'm really happy and like excited to do that. You know, like I think like a lot of the people I grew up like or learned Kubernetes with the Kubernetes, the hardware, and everything that you posted. So for me, it's like a really, really like great opportunity. And let's start talking. Like usually, I know I'll be happy if you can share a bit about how did you ended up in Kubernetes, right? Really from the early days of Kubernetes. So if you can give a bit of a background about you, right? Like start and how did you?
For me, I got into this space maybe from the configuration management world. So like a lot of people, if you were doing DevOps 2010, 2012 era, a lot of them was just like infrastructure as code. So this is before HashiCorp was a thing, not quite Docker. And then eventually when Docker came out, I think for me, seeing that there was a better way. So instead of infrastructure as code and automation, I think Docker brought new abstractions to the table. And so seeing this container thing evolve, and then also Terraform shows up around that time. And so that's when I started to say, look, I got to switch it up. And I started writing things in Go. I wrote an open source project called CoffD, rethinking configuration management myself and say it could be simpler. And then eventually joining CoreOS. And that's where I really learned a lot about like etcd, distributed systems. And of course, in the middle of all of that, Kubernetes comes out from the Google team. And so while I was at CoreOS, kind of working on our own type of project, I decided to start contributing to Kubernetes. When it was very small, people didn't think it was going to actually work because at that time, Docker was king.
Yeah, Docker Swarm.
You also had Mesos. You had all these other bigger projects and maybe more popular projects. And so for me, contributing to Kubernetes kind of made the light bulb go off. This is the perfect design, even in those early days. And maybe since then, being a part of the community, being one of the people who helped find KubeCon, and just making it a community-oriented thing. And here we are almost 10 years later, and it's still going.
No, like it's huge. Like it's still going and just growing, right? Like every day is like more companies are migrating to Kubernetes, trying Kubernetes. So yeah, I think like it's... So why Kubernetes and not Mesos or like supporting... No, Mesos wasn't open source back then or like...
No, Mesos was very open source, very popular. And if you were a larger company like Apple, you definitely use Mesos in production. But I think what Kubernetes resonated with people was because it was a stepping stone from Docker. And so Docker met people where they were. And I think that was more important. And so like OpenStack, these are big, heavy, complicated projects. And a lot of people didn't necessarily have the need nor the willingness to kind of learn that level of complexity because there were other options. But I think Docker and that container was enough motivation for people to get into that ecosystem. But then Kubernetes, if you look at it, the API was compatible with the ideas of infrastructure as code. So a lot of people coming from Terraform, Puppet, Chef, Ansible, you were already...
It was amazing coming from those tools.
And I think Kubernetes resonated way more with that audience than Mesos ever did. And so coming at Kubernetes from the API, which you know I kind of come in from, and then being able to leverage the same containers you were using from the investment in Docker, I thought they brought it together. And even though people say it's complex, it's really simple to get started. Kubectl apply, and you're watching something actually run. I think that was the reason why I think it attracted a lot of people, but kept us there as well.
So I think, you know, like you hit the point, which I think is like the best thing about Kubernetes, which is like the abstraction, how it abstracted the world, like with API first. I wonder, like, you know, like a lot of things have changed, right? Like Kubernetes became super popular. And I hear more and more people now complain about the abstraction. Like, should it be more opinionated or less opinionated? Like, I wonder, like, what do you think? Because this is something that comes up quite a lot. Like, a lot of companies are building their own platform on top of Kubernetes, right? Like, Kubernetes is a tool to build platform upon them. So what's your take here? Like, should there be, like, another layer of abstraction on top of Kubernetes? Shouldn't we?
But this is natural. This is called maturity. When you're a kid, everything is fun, everything is happy. You go outside, you play, nothing hurts. And as you get older, things hurt. You got to slow down. You have bills to pay. And some people say life sucks.
So that's Kubernetes now.
Well, I mean, I think over time, as you perceive more, you learn more, you have more experience, you find opportunities for improvement. Now, the same was true for things like Docker. You can't run it over multiple nodes. You don't have things for managing secrets, all of these things. And so there's two ways you can do this. When you complain, represents opportunity. So you can fill in the gaps. And so when I think about Kubernetes, just getting people from just like running scripts on VMs to where we are with Kubernetes, I'd rather people be complaining from here than complaining from here. So now we have a new thing. So this gray area, complaining. And so people say things like, it should be easier to use. Okay. But we have the right level of abstraction to build that new thing. And so people think we should get more opinionated. But the way I think about the opinionation is more like a restaurant. If you go to the grocery store, you can buy all the ingredients you want and make the food just the way you like it. But you have to go grocery shopping, and no one really likes grocery shop.
That's true.
If you go to a restaurant, you may not like the menu, but it's opinionated. We have these five items for this price, and if you're allergic to shellfish, sorry, we only sell seafood. And you have to find another restaurant. So I think Kubernetes is more like maybe the grocery store.
No, I think like it's an interesting like way of viewing it. But you know, like I think like Docker, you know, I mean, been using Docker for I don't know like 10 years, something like that. It didn't really change, or at least from my perspective, they changed a lot of things like in the underlying infrastructure. No one really cares like most of the time. Kubernetes, on the other hand, I do feel it's like always like things are changing. CRDs, operator, like I think that Kubernetes now and Kubernetes that you used to work like 6 years ago is like completely different ecosystem.
So I feel it's the same.
Yeah?
I don't think Kubernetes has changed at all.
It's the ecosystem then? Like the
Yeah, because like Linux doesn't change, but there are more bash scripts than there ever was. So did Linux change or did the scripts people write change?
No, it's an interesting like
Kubernetes was designed for change to be a part of it. When CRDs were made, it was because we knew that there had to be extensions. If you look at Terraform, it also has modules and extensions. But the fundamentals of Kubernetes are roughly the same. You declare an API, you give it a controller and makes it happen. So where else do people want to use this kind of control plane technique? So to me, I think Kubernetes, here's the thing. When you're successful in infrastructure, you can't change. Once you build a freeway or a train, you cannot change it easily, right? Because people rely on it to be a stable foundation. So Kubernetes is successful. It cannot change very much. But the cars that drive on freeways can change, right? They can go from trucks to electric cars. But the freeway is going to have to be stable.
I think like I heard like, I don't know, like 5 years ago, one of the guys from like Python WSGI, like the format that said something like that. Like, you know, we reach a level of like popularity that everyone loves to complain and WSGI is not good enough, but it made Python into like the easiest way to develop servers. So I think like it's interesting. But so what's the future like in 5 years, 10 years? Is it still better trucks on top of the same Kubernetes roads, or is it going to be like something else, like the roads themselves? Like,
I think two things will happen. The people that are deep in Kubernetes may be too blind or distracted to create a better future. That's usually the trap that most people fall in.
Yeah,
right. They can only see what's in
front. Yeah,
I think the people who complain tend to have the best opportunity to make the future, right? Because everything they complain about, and if they ever fix it, then that will be the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? People said Mesos was too hard, it didn't have a good API, and then they made something different. And then that's the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the future will be many paths. Will Kubernetes be a part of it is a different question. So we talk a lot about Kubernetes, but their Linux is right there powering the whole thing. And it sits there as this stable kind of foundation. And so I think some people will attempt to build the future on top of Q until it no longer makes any sense.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting. For me, like Linux, I think like it's an interesting like way of viewing it. Linux, I don't know why. I think like Kubernetes, I feel it's like much more the community always gets in your head about what you need to install on top of Kubernetes. What's the proper way? And like when I set up like a new Linux, like Docker machine or whatever, I don't know, it doesn't come with so many boundaries. And with Kubernetes, you know, you read like what's the getting started with Kubernetes. And all of a sudden you have like six different operators that you must have, like, I don't know, like Loki, Grafana, Secret Manager, External DNS, External Secrets for the Secret Management. So I feel that like running like bare bone Kubernetes, like you can do it, like it is totally possible. But if you feel like the standards are of us as an industry are going up.
Think about Linux, because maybe we've forgotten. Mm-hmm. There's lots of shells, Bash, Zshell, and also Zilcorn shell. Mm-hmm. You can install Apache or Nginx or Envoy. You can use systemd in a system, upstart. You can do apt-get or yum install, or you can use brew. You have all of these things in the Linux world. It's just that Linux is so mature that you just say, stop playing around. You can get Red Hat, Ubuntu, or Debian. Stop playing around because there's other things to do. So a lot of people have said, hey, do we need another package manager? The answer is no. Stop. So right now, we're in the experimentation phase. Oh, I want this new feature. Fork it, make a new one, make some t-shirts, make some stickers, go through the conference, have a booth, and say, hey, we have a new project. Right? So we're in that phase. And then maybe 10 years from now, people will stop. We don't need 7 logging daemons. Maybe we just need one. Mm-hmm. Maybe the standards will actually take over. So I think just this phase is experimentation. We will find stuff that works, maybe 2 or 3 of them. And I think the other ones will have to consolidate.
Between the different tools in the ecosystem or?
For example, Prometheus is great. A lot of people like the philosophy push versus pull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We like the idea that we give our endpoints / metrics and we can standardize on how to get information from a machine. But if you're a cloud provider, does that mean running the Prometheus binary? Or does it mean implementing the Prometheus protocol on top of your existing stack? And I think what we're seeing is more people just implementing the Prometheus protocol than trying to run Prometheus.
Yeah.
That to me is also a form of consolidation. We see the same thing with Postgres, right? New database comes out and it says like CockroachDB, just use the Postgres protocol. But there's a new implementation.
Oh.
So that's what I mean by consolidation around the API. And if you can make a better implementation or maybe better extensions, then yeah, you will compete on those grounds. But right now, we're still trying to figure out all the different levels and components.
Well, I think it's a great point. It comes down to what you said that, you know, made Kubernetes like win, which is like the APIs basically, that are on one hand, they give you the opportunity like to liberate you from almost anything, right? Like you can switch back and you can switch the like CoreOS, for example, right? Or the network provider and so many different things that you don't even think about like most of the time. So it is like a quite interesting view. No, like I think, you know, Linux did won in the end. Like Linux is here to stay like for, and not a lot of things that they used to work are so like so strong. Like even if you look at like programming languages, right? Like, I know like there's like the Java, Python, Golang come out of like nowhere, Rust, Clojure. Like I don't see like, you know, like as time progresses, I feel that no one is really winning this space, right? And there's like
no competition either. There, it makes no sense to have Linux is modular enough
Because of the modularity. So you are saying like the modularity of Linux.
So there's an outlet, right? So the community says we need an operating system.
Mm-hmm.
Linux did not win Mac. Last I checked, Apple is not running Linux on my MacBook. So in the Apple ecosystem, they have the operating system they deserve.
Yes.
They have the one that works well for them. So macOS has won in that space. Darwin has won in that space. There are some people that still like Windows. Don't ask me why. But that's the thing. And there's still some people that like Windows. I think Linux on the server side became a better Unix than Unix because of the community aspects of, if you were using AIX, you're in the IBM ecosystem. If you're using Linux and you want to have a new driver or new network interface, they were able to absorb that in the community. So I think it's more of a, less about winning and more about fostering what the community needs. And what we're seeing now, and Kubernetes follows that path, when you have an outlet like CRDs, that means that the community doesn't have to get everything inside of the core.
Yeah.
They can actually do things externally and keep the community going. And then more people get invited in because it's welcoming in that regard. So I think it's more about if you want to become a foundational piece, we know for now you have to have extensions. Terraform is another example, right?
Yep.
There's modules and extensions. So, of course, Terraform can absorb that community.
No, it's like super interesting like to think about the extendability that allow you to grow and foster that community that in turns like makes you so successful, right? Like in NFX.
Because you don't do that. Like in GenX, you end up with either a fork,
yeah,
or you end up with a spinoff like Envoy that says, hey, the community can no longer change NGINX. So then we lead to go do something
different. Yeah.
And we stop when there's a project that can't.
No, like load balancers, there are so many, right? Like this is like another example. Is Envoy extendable? Like I never tried to work enough with Envoy. Like
Envoy is very extendable in the sense that it supports modules, plugins. It has an API. It supports control planes.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're the Istio community, you base it on Envoy. If you're a cloud provider and you have an internal load balancer, you place it on Envoy. So if you look at a lot of the communities that are building things, a lot of people have chosen to build their new thing on top of Envoy.
Yep.
15 years ago, this could have been NGINX, but NGINX went enterprise and, you know, some things they couldn't do. So I think that's what I mean by extending. Now, should everyone go build out their own load balancer? Probably no. But it makes sense why Envoy has become the foundation for so many other networking products.
Because also like the extendability.
It's extendable. It supports layers. You can put in custom filters. And I think they also now have WASM support. So you can actually do plugins in WASM now.
Oh, it's like, you know, NGINX did try it, right? Like you have the Lua plugins. You do have something. But I think the company itself wasn't that
extensive. Well, I mean, the enterprise said, hey, listen, the API will only be available in the enterprise. And to do extensions, you almost have to recompile NGINX. Whereas in these other platforms, there's literally either a plugin that you can drop into place, or in the case of Kubernetes, you have CRDs where you can just make one call and now the API exists and the controller can run independent.
Well, I think like CRD is like by far the strongest thing in Kubernetes for me, right? Like I also started Kubernetes when CRD was already a thing, right? Like before that, there was...
No, there's no CRDs. Brendan Burns... I think when we were competing with like Docker Swarm, what's the difference between Kubernetes and Docker? And I think most people will say is the expandability. Emission controllers, CRDs, CNI, container runtime interface, all of these things mean like you can customize the platform to fit your needs.
So like what's the future, Kelsey? Of like everything we talk here, like if we're going to talk like in 5 years, right? I'm going to interview. What's going to be different, if any?
The people who are talking about the same thing.
that's it?
5 years, I think, is too short of a horizon because you're going to remember Linux is 30 plus years old.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just finally migrating to Linux for the first time.
Yeah, yeah.
So Kubernetes is like 10 years. If you look at this conference, 60% of the people, maybe 40% of people, first time.
Yeah, completely.
They've been ignoring Kubernetes for the last 10 years, and now their company has it, and now they have to learn it. Once you get to that point, it may be another 10 years before those people start complaining and building their new thing. So I think that in 5 years, it's going to look roughly the same. The people that are looking at Kube. Now, there may be a world that evolves outside of Kube because those people get to think freely.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to try to mimic and think about backwards compatibility, so they get to be free. So one bonus that Kubernetes had is Docker had to build Swarm in a way that was backwards compatible.
Yeah,
Kubernetes didn't. So somewhere, somebody is probably working on something that is not backwards compatible, and that may be the thing that moves us forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there any project that you think that is like going there or like close of going there?
No.
No, I also don't know. I also don't.
Not in the Kubernetes community. The answer is no.
No, in the Kubernetes, no. No, but outside the community, you know, like Lambda tried to be like an alternative to Kubernetes, but I feel that
Lambda is a alternative to Kubernetes. There are people who only use Lambda and they don't think about Kubernetes. There are some people who use Cloudflare Workers and Vercel that don't think about Kubernetes. Remember, I think the biggest challenge we have is the world is way bigger than Kubernetes. There's probably 100 times more people that don't use Kubernetes than that do. And so we got to keep that in mind. So yes, in the Kubernetes ecosystem, there's so much opportunity. There's so much excitement. But if you zoom out, where's all the hype today? AI, ML, other places. And last I checked, most of them are not talking about Kubernetes. So I think we just got to make sure we have a big view. And then we can take the things we learn from Kubernetes and maybe we can bring them to other communities if we want to keep this thing going.
I think like the most interesting point that you talked about and we talked about for most of the episode is like the extendability and having this mindset that you want people to easily extend you basically and to fit their needs. Like I think like in our domain, like the 80-20 rule, there are a lot of people in the this like 20% that you don't really don't want to develop for them, but you want to give them the tools to do that. So I think like it's like extendability and community. So no, quite interesting. Like I think a lot of people think about Kubernetes as like a technology first, but as you are like preaching it, it's much more like a human project that's the reason that it won. Or
Kubernetes is a serialization of a very specific philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And that philosophy brought us this open source project. And that philosophy has moved a lot of people from writing scripts to thinking about abstraction, going from automation to orchestration. And I think that nuance is going to set the stage for the next wave of thinking. Because once we get to this level, now we're going to say, so then what's next from there? But I think it's going to take a while to get people to rebase what we think the baseline or minimum bar should be. So yeah, it's a manifestation of a philosophy.
No, I think it's like super interesting. Okay, Kelsey, I think we're running out of time. It was a pleasure having you.
Thanks for having me.
Super interesting episode, and thanks a lot.
Awesome. Good.